The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Welcome to the show. Actually, you should be welcoming me to the show. I took my first, it was a week plus a couple days. It was probably 10 days altogether. I took my first vacation in probably... oh, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years, maybe longer. I'm not even sure. I mean, I've gotten away usually for business reasons for 3 or 4 days at a time here and there going to an event, which I enjoy. So it's almost like a vacation. But I haven't taken a week plus I'm really struggling to remember the last time I did that. It's been a really, really long time. And I'm not going to lie, I am exhausted from it. I am completely wiped out from my week's vacation, my 10 days, whatever it was. I apologize for not having shows last week. I frequently will have best ofs run, but I just decided, you know what? We're just going to take a pause. And that's what we did last week. So we're here back tonight to bring you, obviously, another great interview, great discussion. We're going to be talking with Jen Ward tonight. Jen is a dynamic healer, an executive coach, and a group facilitator. And she'll be talking about Spiritual Freedom Technique. It's the SFT Lexicon. That's the name of her book. By the way, I've got the book here. This thing, I mean, this is like half a library. This is not just a book. This is some significantly detailed work. And we're going to get the nuts and bolts of it from Jen tonight. She'll tell us what it's all about. We'll be talking about past lives. We'll be talking about existing lives. We'll talk about mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual blockages we could be suffering from, how to overcome those, and actually find ways to realize our full potential in life. That's what we'll be talking about with Jen Ward tonight. So it'll be a great conversation. I do want to mention one other thing, because we are broadcasting here on YouTube. My other program that I have been doing here on YouTube, which most of you know, is a political program. While I was on vacation, I do that program with Britt Griffith. And again, most of you know that. While I was on vacation, Britt ran the show. And the first night that he did it, which was last Monday night, so a week ago last night, in the first 3 minutes, he ran a video which got the channel suspended from YouTube. So if you've been looking for the Independence Gang for the last week, the YouTube channel has been suspended. However, the program has continued. As I've always said, we've always said, if you show up to see the show on YouTube some night and it is not there, go to Twitch or go to Rumble. Or you can wait for the podcast the next day, but go to Twitch, Rumble, or the live stream backups for the Independence Gang, and you can await further instructions. Now, the show should be back live on YouTube Wednesday night, so that'll be tomorrow night, if our math is correct with this suspension. So we've gotten our first spanking from YouTube. What a joke, right? But we've gotten our first. And if it happens again within 90 days, then we get a two-week suspension. If it happens again within another period of time, I'm not sure what the second period of time, then we actually get our account deleted. I mean, we try to walk the line. We're trying not to say anything that is knowingly false. These are the things that we talk about in the program or should be open for discussion and debate. That's the way democracy works. But apparently it doesn't work that way on this particular channel. So whatever. We'll just continue to try to do our best to avoid those things while still fulfilling our purpose. However, our purpose here on this program is far different. We talk about many things, mystical, esoteric, paranormal, of course. We've got some great shows coming up. At this point, I'll be doing live shows on Tuesday and Thursday nights, because we are doing the Independence Gang Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And right now, it's just too much for me to juggle doing two shows on any given night. So I do one. And that's how we're going to be moving forward. Fiddy, I see you're questioning where everybody is. You know, we haven't been on in a while. It'll take a few minutes for people to file in. Got to just relax, my friend. Got to relax. Okay, let's take a break. Let's get Jen Ward on the phone with us and begin our conversation. We can start talking about all of her work. She's not just written this one book. I mean, she's got like 19 books to her credit. She's a very, very accomplished author. And has written a lot about many different topics. And we'll touch on some of that stuff as well with Jen. It's Beyond Reality, and we will be right back. Don't go away.
Hey, it's JV here. You know I've asked for your support in the past, and I'm going to do it again because it's really, really important. And there are a couple of ways you can support the show, and it's so inexpensive. Now, you can go to Patreon, and you can become a Patreon supporter, and we really, really encourage that. But there's also another way. If you look at the description of the podcast, if you're a podcast listener, and you scroll down to the bottom, there's a way to support the show directly through the podcast app. And it's only 99 cents a month. It's less than a buck. You probably have that change in your couch right now. That dollar a month, less than a dollar, goes a long way in helping us produce this program, provide great interviews for you during the course of the week. I thank you in advance because the support is so important to the program.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
All right, welcome back to the program. It's Beyond Reality. Don't forget, we've got some great shows coming up, and we're going to be talking about things like ghosts and Bigfoot. There's been a bunch of Bigfoot sightings recently that have a lot of people scratching their heads, so we'll be talking about that a little bit. Of course, there's always UFO conversation in our future. A lot of great stuff, but tonight we're going to be talking with Jen Ward. Jen is a dynamic healer, an executive coach, and a group facilitator. We're going to be talking specifically about SFT, that is Spiritual Freedom Technique. She's got a book out called the SFT Lexicon. I'm holding it in my hands. Jen, this is a heck of a book. It's kind of heavy. I could actually do my workout with this book. This is a heck of a piece of work. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Davey. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Since it's the first time you've been on the show with us, I'd love to learn a little bit more about you. How'd you get involved in all this?
I'm just one of those pathetic people. I've had a very abusive lifetime, and I just had a great imagination and these great sensitivities where I had nowhere to go but inwardly because nobody wanted to deal with me on the outside, right? Youngest of 10, alcoholics, abusive, you know, and so I had to go within just to have any normalcy at all, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. Sounds kind of tragic in a way, which I'm sure you'd agree with.
Oh, but I love that it's tragic because you know what? A lot of people live in tragedy and they think they're alone. So it's time to, like, you know, get them out of the closet, you know, embrace your differences, embrace your story. Everyone's got one.
Yeah, but the way you just described that and the way you told that little bit of your story there, I'm sure there are a lot of people thinking, wow, I kind of feel that way. I kind of feel like the only place I can turn is to within myself. Without getting too personal, Jen, because I don't want to, you know, drag up any skeletons that you don't want to talk about, but were these family issues that you were dealing with? Was it family while you were a child? Give us a sense of how this developed in your life.
Well, actually, it was the whole life. So I'm the youngest of 10 in a Catholic family. My mother didn't want to have children anymore. Mm-hmm. I was her worst nightmare as giving birth. So she tried to, like, abort me or
kill
me to death. And all the time I was gestating, she was trying to figure out how to get rid of me. The night I was born, she was drunk as a skunk, and she was screaming how much she hated me, and she cursed me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was a great introduction.
Yeah, what a way to start. What a way to start.
No, but it actually does work out well because I have the strength of the resistance, you know. If someone, like, doesn't like me, that's just another day at home for me. So,
yeah, right. I mean, you learn how to be strong against that. When it starts from the very first breath you take, you kind of learn how to be strong against that, don't you?
Absolutely, and you know what? People out there have strengths that they don't even realize they have until they're tested and stuff. So people have to realize that, you know, they're not being victimized in the ways they think they are. They're actually being blessed with this sensitivity and this strength that is beyond compare. So they need to embrace that more.
I think that's such an important point. I don't know if you heard the introduction to the program, but I also do a political show. And a lot of times when I talk about politics on the other show, you know, there's a lot of victimhood that people are raising throughout the country everywhere in everyday life. And I keep, you know, and some of it's very legitimate, but in other cases, I keep thinking, you know what? Everybody's had adversity in their life in some form or another. And generally, if you instead of looking for excuses for that adversity, if you face it and learn how to become stronger from it, it makes you a better person. Ultimately, so much success and so much achievement has come from people overcoming adversity.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, I love it when I'm wrong, because I don't want to be burdened with having the absolute truth out there, and that, you know, that's a heavy burden for people. So when they think that they have the absolute truth, that's a heavy weight to carry. So when someone proves me wrong, it's relief to me. Like, thank goodness. Thank goodness I don't have to carry that truth myself.
Let me take you back again to your childhood. Did you, obviously, you told us a story that was in some ways very terrible about your mother's feelings about you as she was pregnant for you and as she brought you into the world. But did you ever develop a healthy relationship with your mother?
No, I was never loved as a child. I never had close contact. I actually have a flat spot on the back of my head where I laid against the headboard as a baby, and it just formed against the headboard. Yeah.
What do you think in retrospect, now you work with energy, you're a healer in many ways, both, you know, mentally and emotionally and all of these things. What do you, when you look back on maybe your time in the womb, that negative energy that your mother had during that time, do you think that affected you while you were in the womb?
Of course it does affect you when you're in the womb, but... So the thing is like, that doesn't even matter. I have the perfect mother for my purpose in this lifetime. So I don't like dwell on that. I mean, there is a lot of post-traumatic stress about growing up. And as a matter of fact, I have nightmares. Like, I was locked up, starved, and tortured on the property by a sociopath 12 years ago.
You were, hold on. You were locked what now?
I don't have nightmares about that, though. I have nightmares about the siblings and being around relatives, so that puts that in perspective.
Did you say you were locked up in an upstairs and tortured?
No, starved and tortured. No, in a basement.
Oh, in a basement. Were you a captive? What?
Yeah, I had Stockholm Syndrome with this guy. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yep. And it was training for what I do. I've learned to have compassion for anyone from any walk of life. And I was sensory deprived there. I couldn't, like, watch TV, read newspapers, talk to anyone, whatever. So I really developed more sensitivities, even greater than I already had. So it was great training for what I do now.
Well, you know, your outlook and your the way you look at your past and you paint. I mean, I hear these things and the audience hears these things and they think, how horrible. And yet you talk about them as though they're an asset experience and education. What a tremendous outlook you have on things.
Well, you know what? When I first started sharing, like, ways to help people, like on social media or whatever, because you know, I do have these innate talents that maybe other people don't have. I would get challenged by these people, and they would think that, well, you couldn't possibly know what I've been through. And then, so I realized I had to tell my story, so they didn't think that they had me bested. And it shouldn't have to be a contest on who's got the worst life. But once they realized what I had been through, they didn't have to try to best me, and they couldn't play the victim with me.
Wow.
No one can play the victim with me.
Yeah, so you looked at your life experience. You saw other people in need and other people that might need a bit of a, if not help, maybe even a bit of a wake-up call, as you kind of explained it there. And you decided to help them. At what point did that turnabout happen for you?
So when I came back from the property, I thought I was a retarded boy. I was so brainwashed, and I was like, I almost died there. So I was like really weak, and I was really naive, and my brain had suffered. I hadn't eaten a lot of food in a year. So I just was in so much pain. But I still had this ability to help people, and so I went to a family picnic, and I helped this nephew who is really savvy in business. And I made him cry, and he's not the type of person to cry. And I could empathize with what he was going through where nobody else would because he didn't talk about it. But I knew what he was going through because I can just see it, and I can sense it with my, you know, subtle senses. And he actually cried. And after that, him and his business people made a website for me so I could reach out to other people, taught me how to tweet. They actually had to teach me. And then I helped a celebrity find her lost dog, Mariel Hemingway, and then I got a lot of followers on Twitter. But then I was just, I used that for therapy. I would just help people. I would just send out positive tweets and messages and make people feel better, and that was my therapy. And it's just continued to this day.
You talk about these senses, and you've mentioned it a few times, senses that you have that most people don't have. Are these, like, would you consider them to be psychic or spiritual sensitivities?
Well, I don't call myself psychic or clairvoyant or medium. I do all those things, but I think everybody does have those senses. They just haven't been trained in it. So you even have them. Like, you're a bullshit artist, right? You can tell when someone's BSing you, right?
Generally, yeah.
Okay, so that's a subtle sense. You're not, you know, seeing it, you're not touching it, you're not tasting it, but you still have this knowingness. And so, and you get gut feelings about things, right?
You get
like red flags about things. That's all your subtle senses. So part of what I like to do is like to articulate what the subtle senses are like so people can like explore it for themselves so they're not at the mercy of people who are trying to like shake them down, like unethical psychics or whatever. They can do that stuff for themselves in lots of cases.
So you help people. By the way, I should mention your website is Genuine Healing, and Genuine is a playoff of your name. It's J-E-N as in Jen Ward, Genuine Healing, which is rather clever. But you describe yourself as a healer, but not just any healer. You're a dynamic healer. What is dynamic healing?
Well, I started saying it tongue-in-cheek, you know what I mean? Because, like, I was trained to put myself down, to make fun of myself. I was smart enough to know that other people were going to put me down because that was my role in the family. And so I started to realize how sensitive I was in energy when I stopped putting myself down. And it's a hard habit to break because that was a survival skill.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So what I had to do is do tongue-in-cheek, and I'd say I'm a dynamic healer because I didn't really believe it. But then I grew into it and stuff, and people are actually getting rid of their issues using the SFT protocol and my help in lots of ways because I'm so sensitive I can perceive stagnant energy in someone. It's almost like, you know how you're like if there's smoke in a room and it's really stuffy and you can't breathe?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel another person's energy when they have stagnant energy. And I do medical intuitive so I can go and see into their body where there's blockages and help release them because I can move energy with my intentions. I don't think it's, I mean, other people think it's fabulous, but I think it came from having such low self-esteem
mm-hmm.
that if anybody came to me and wanted help, I wanted to do anything I could to help them. And I basically did that. So there were times when I was younger when someone would call me, and I don't know how they knew that I could do this or whatever, but they said they didn't want to go to the emergency room. It was the middle of the night. They were having, like, diverticulosis, which is bleeding from the rectum that wouldn't stop, or someone close to me was having a stroke at one time, and he intuitively knew to call me.
Wow.
So I make these sounds, which is like converting their pain to a different form of energy, which is sound energy, and releasing it. And so this person who was having a stroke, I was making these noises and stuff, and I was about to take it all away. And something in my mind, like the spirit guides or the guides that I use, said, don't take it all away. He needs this lesson. So, and I didn't even know what I was, what was happening. You know, I knew I was talking to something, but I just, you know, it was just instinct as well. And so what happened was, he ended up having a mini stroke. I kept him from having a major stroke where he was like brain dead or whatever. And he had the little bittest of lisp from it. And that was all he had. But he needed that little lisp for humility or something. So they made me stop.
Yeah. So I have so many questions about that. So I noted in the information we have and the research we did on your work that you say you work with adepts. Now, let's talk about them for a second. But when you say they and you're talking about spirit guides, are they the same thing as
the adepts?
Yes, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us what they are.
They don't lead with personality because, like, people know spirit guides and then they want to know, oh, St. Michael or this one or that one. And as soon as they start naming it and worshiping it, it becomes bastardized, and it becomes an ego thing, and they start to worship this thing, this person. And the adepts are like, don't want their personalities to get involved. They just silently work with people. I'm sure a lot of people are working with them and don't even realize it. But it's more subtle, and or maybe not, but it's not a personality worship. So it's a definite assistance, and they've helped keep me alive. They helped me escape when I needed to escape, and they've helped me keep going when I needed to keep going.
Jen, what are the adepts, though? Are they spiritual beings? Are they angels?
Yes.
Are they ghosts?
Humans. They're humans.
Okay.
That have, like, just lived so long. They kept their physical body because at a certain level of awareness, you can control whether you cross over or not. I mean, you figure everything out, and trust me, it's possible to figure out a lot of this stuff and to manipulate body functions and such. So they decided to stick around in the physical form, and they have a lot of the abilities that an angel would have, like they can bilocate or, you know, be present in when they're not present, you know. So, but...
But are they in physical form when you work with them, when they help you?
No, they don't come to me in physical.
Okay.
I've only had them come to me in physical form a couple times.
I see.
And one time when I was learning massage in my own massage room, one of the adepts, a Chinese master, came into my room and I was doing cranial sacral with this person. And he came to the other end of the body and was teaching me an energy how to do healing. See, I have this ability to, like, do many different healing modalities that other people went after massage school. They went away and spent thousands of dollars to learn these different modalities. And they would come back and just share them with me, and I just mastered them just by knowing of them. And so, so I get to use all these different modalities. And this adept was teaching me how to be a better healer.
How long have you been aware of them in your life? How long have you known? I mean, I'll ask part B in a second. How long have you been aware of their role in your life?
I knew them as a child, but I didn't know who they were. So I had, like, we have established I'd have a horrific childhood. But when there was a lot of trauma, they would come to me and they would calm me. So one night, my mother's lover's son was torturing me with teasing me, saying, because we lived really poor in the house, we only had a space heater to heat it. And he goes, oh, this house is so dry, if this space heater knocks over, this house is going to go up in a second and everyone's going to die. And he terrified me, right? I was
sure,
only like nine.
Yeah.
And so I'm laying in bed, like, really scared and stuff, and then the adepts came through and said, don't be silly. We didn't bring you here. You didn't come here just to go out like that. You got a lot of work to do this lifetime. And don't worry about that. And they comforted me in that way.
So it seems like your life and your course, your path through life, was a bit predetermined based on what you just told us.
But I didn't know it at the time.
Sure, you didn't,
How many people out there's life is predetermined and they don't know until hindsight?
Right.
So when I was on the property with this sociopath, psychopath, I don't know the difference, he would send me through this routine of you know, berating me and humiliating me and all these things, and I was talking in my head, and something was telling me I had to stay, and that I was going to be world renowned one day. And back then, I didn't have any writings, I didn't have any protocol, I didn't even know I could do such healing and stuff. I only had a little hint of it, but they said that this was important for me to be here, and I was doing something there. It was important to me. And actually, while I was on the property that year, I went through the process of enlightenment, which is a real thing, by the way. It's a three-day formula thing where you see what humans do is wrong as far as when they want awareness. They try to avoid everything that's awful, and they try to be good, and religions teach them to be good, but they're keeping them away from the edge of enlightenment, because enlightenment is having the ego go into everything that's horrific and to see it as part of you and to, like, step into that and step through it and see the illusion of that. And when you see the illusion of that, there's nothing else to fear. And when there's nothing else to fear, the ego can't hook to you anymore and can't subjugate you. And then you leave. The ego is taken out for like 3 days, and there's just incredible bliss. It's just, it's the most common experience that you can ever imagine. But then after the 3 days, the ego comes back in, because you need it to live as a tool. And then it feels like something scary is happening, like you're being overtaken by something evil. But you just have to, like, relax with it and realize it's just a process. So more and more people are able to go through enlightenment. And as a matter of fact, I've had clients through my tapping methods be able to go through enlightenment. And so it's happening more spontaneous now these days.
So the events that you describe as being with a, you say, sociopath or a psychopath, you don't know the difference. And quite honestly, Jen, I don't either. So okay. I'm not going to try to pretend I do. Whatever that person was, you said that was like 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So when you got out of that situation and you recognized how much you had to offer people to help them, you started writing, and you've written what, 18, 19 books. You've written a lot of stuff.
19 books. And no, I didn't actually realize I had that much to offer. I've been writing blind, and I still don't realize the extent to which I have things to offer, but I know. See, I have the 19 books out there, but I listen to the adepts, and the last 4 or 5 years have been really choppy. And there were like there was a real chance that we wouldn't break through to exist, to continue to exist, because of the battle for the dominance. But I know it sounds crazy. And
no, I just want to make sure. Are you talking about we as a world, or we as a you and the adepts?
We as the world.
Okay.
The Earth, the humanity.
Humanity.
Humanity. So I've been doing inward work for the last 4 or 5 years with the tapping, with groups and stuff, to dissipate a lot of psychic streams of energy of people and things in power. So what people and things in power try to do is they try to create suffering to use as a fuel for their agendas. So what I do, because of my awareness of energy and how it gets stockpiled, as power factions have tried to stockpile suffering, I've been dissipating their stockpiles and dissipating it and giving it back to the individuals. And I know it sounds silly and stuff, but the work I do is, I actually wrote a book called The Turning Point, which was all the tapes I've put out there in 1 year. And the adepts wanted me to write that as evidence of what I was putting out there to shift consciousness in the world.
Do you channel the adepts?
No, I don't need to.
You don't need to.
No, and you know what? There's a lot of people who like think that they channel, but they just don't have the self-confidence to realize that they're tapping into direct knowingness. So it's almost like channeling as a crutch to not realize how dynamic they are themselves. Right. So that's another thing I like to do is empower individuals. Usually when you get someone on the planet who has an awareness, and so I might have an awareness that other people might have, they try to leverage that for personal power. But the beauty of myself and being in a female body is I don't collect power from what I do. I actually use my talents in an altruistic way to help all individuals all over the world get their empowerment back. And this is kind of a little evidence of it when you see all these people in all these countries being able to protest when why weren't they able to protest years before this and stuff? Because they're actually getting some of their individuality and their energy back from the work that me and some of the people who do the Tapping for Humanity do.
I feel a little bit naive when asking this next question, but you talk about being the reincarnation of Madame Blavatsky. I don't know who Madame Blavatsky is, but I know I've heard the name.
I know. She's the one who started the spiritualist movement in the 1800s.
Okay.
So back then I was trying to empower women in a different way using the spiritualist movement, and I also started the Theosophy group. But what happened then is... you know, my work got bastardized and uncontaminated, and actually Hitler used Madame Blavatsky's work to gain awareness.
That's
which
right.
Was like, I know, so part of a lot of the work I do is cleaning up that mess. So I'm doing energy work this lifetime to clean up the power mongers because I set that in motion by giving out too much truth when it was used wrong. That's one thing I got from that lifetime. Another thing is I set up the Theosophy movement, and they kicked me out. Now, when you kick out the someone who starts something like that, you remove the heart of it. And that's why it became such a mental group. So because I started a group in that lifetime, and I saw how badly that ended up going, as far as, like, it's not taking people to enlightenment, it's only taking them to the mental realms. I learned my lesson to not form a group in this lifetime. My intentions in this lifetime are to actually focus on the individuals and empower all individuals one by one, not in a group consciousness, because I've relatively recently, this lifetime, realized that all groups are energetic Ponzi schemes, if you think about it. So you give your energy to this group, and you're promised all these things, riches, mm-hmm. you know. And then you don't get a return, but the group gets more stronger, and you just stay the same unless, you know, you make us think about it. So it's the same thing as a money Ponzi scheme.
A lot of people... have some bit of knowledge of past lives and mm-hmm. and connections with people, historical figures, and we talk about a lot. But a lot of them are a bit uncertain about it. But you're completely convinced and very certain that you have this connection, right? And what makes you so certain?
Because I look just like her. So I was told I was her when I was much younger, and I saw her, and she's got bulgy eyes. She's overweight. She's like. She looks like my sister and her daughter, and but she didn't look like me. I was in denial and stuff. So comes like a few years later, I didn't want to believe I was her because she was so homely. So I had her book, and I held it up to my face, her profile next to my profile, and we look like the splitting image of each other. And then my writing is a lot like hers, and there's other coincidences, like her first book was published in my hometown, Rochester, New York.
Oh, wow.
And she talks about Rochester, New York, and her book, first edition of her first book, being a floodgate of higher consciousness pouring into the physical world. And she talked about tapping. She called it rapping, but she was talking about what I was doing now in the future. So she left breadcrumbs for me in that way. Now, since then, I've met my soulmate, and I'm moving to Wodonga, Australia.
Oh, man. Wow.
I know. And she talked about how special Australia was, and it was the site of Lemuria, which I don't... And then people refute that and stuff, but then through some other channelings, they said there's going to be a Lemuria, too. Mm. And it's like I've had this dream of opening up a healing center where I meld my healing abilities with the trees. And I was going to start there here in Rochester, New York. And just about that time when I was about to get that property, I met my soulmate. He came to me as a client, and he had a similar dream of starting this community that was sustainable and gave back to nature and whatever. So we held the same vision, only we each held a half of the vision. So we realized that we were going to come together, and then it naturally progressed that I would move to Australia and we'd create the spiritual city together.
Is your soulmate from Australia? Is that why?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I'm in upstate New York as well. I'm in Cooperstown, New York. It's only a few hours mm-hmm. from Rochester. I've spent a significant amount of time in Rochester. In fact, I produced and hosted an event in Rochester in the, what the heck was the name of the hotel? It was like the Downtown Riverside Hotel. They just tore it down, didn't they?
I don't think so. I think it's still there. They might be turning it into college campuses or something. But
okay.
Yes, I knew it was still there.
Well, all I know is when I showed up to have the event there, now I'd been planning this for over a year, and I show up to have the event there, and the hotel tells me they're shutting down. We're the last group of people that will be in the hotel, and they're going to be shutting down. Therefore, the hotel bar and restaurant were closed.
Wow.
The rooms were in shambles. The place was a mess. It was not a particularly pleasant experience. But
no. Yeah. Downtown Rochester is not the way you would go. All of the things move out into the suburbs.
Yeah, yeah. But Rochester's a really neat city, though. I like it a lot. There's a section there where Eastman's house is and that whole area, whatever that is. I can't remember the name of it, but it's so beautiful. The homes are gorgeous.
Yeah, the East Avenue, that's like a couple miles from where I live.
Yeah, it's beautiful there. And by the way, anybody who doesn't know who I'm talking about when I say Eastman, George Eastman was the founder of Kodak, and Kodak was founded in Rochester. So I want to talk a little bit about the Akashic Records. Another thing we hear frequently, you know, when we talk to people who are psychics or other type of spiritualists, they often refer to the Akashic Records. You talk about them. One of your skills is that you can read them. What are they? Why are they important? And do you need some kind of special skill to be able to get information out of the Akashic Records?
No, everybody's a compilation of their Akashic Records. So, but they're not from the psychic realm. The psychic realm is the astral plane. The Akashic Records are on the next level of consciousness, more refined vibratory rate, the causal plane. And if you can tell when you're having dreams on the causal plane and not the astral plane, is you'll have like pictures or different eras in history or these Akashic Records show up as photographs or catalog cards. So that's the symbol of them. If anybody's having dreams of those, they're visiting their Akashic Records. And so what they are is all the images off of your past, present, and future. And so ever since I've been a little girl, I've been like being taken into past lives and stuff. I remember being untouchable in India and living in a gutter. And I've been shown a lot of different ways I've been murdered. And I've actually spent time as a ghost, and it's one of the loneliest experiences there is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so I'm so sensitive to energy. When someone calls me for a private session, I still do private sessions, which are amazing. My private sessions are kind of like, you know how like between lifetimes you get a reboot, you get to like figure out what you need to do and and do it better in the next life or something.
Well, I know that that's what people say happens. I have to warn you, I am about as sensitive and aware of these things personally as a brick is. I feel like I'm one of the least sensitive people when it comes to this type of thing. I've been told over and over that I just have to find it within me and learn how to use it. I really feel like I am completely cut off to those types of sensitivities. So I've heard that's the case. I just have no personal experience with it.
Well, the thing is, you are sensitive. You are kind, and you are you're thoughtful, and that's a form of sensitivity. My sense is that you... What happens is we've done some stuff in past lifetimes that we're not proud of, and we have to have every experience in the thing, because the whole point of life is to school us on how to have this compassion and how to embrace our omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence. So we get these experiences of what it's like to kill someone, what it's like to be in pain, what it's like to suffer, all these things, so we can relate to everyone else, right? So my sense is something in your past you don't want to look at because it's too painful. So you think that you're not sensitive, but you're probably very sensitive, and you just can't consciously deal with the pain. Mm. But the beauty of the SFT lexicon book and the Tapping protocols is you don't have to relive the pain. You don't even have to feel it. You can just get a sense of what you want to release, and then the taps all end with in all moments. So if you're feeling pain in this lifetime, it's most likely something that has happened in a past lifetime, and you're reliving it because you've created these hiccups, these patterns in your energy field. So when you release the patterns in the present lifetime, you're also releasing it in the past. But the beauty of what I do is I'm able to go into that past lifetime, that core issue of when things were happening, and release it from that lifetime, which makes it more powerful to release it in this lifetime.
Let's talk a little bit about male and female energy. You touched on it a little bit earlier in our conversation, but you say it's very, very important. What's the significance of male and female energy in relationship to what we're talking about right now?
Okay, so most people on the planet are in male energy now, even women. So the problem is male energy and female energy have different strengths. Like male energy is goal oriented and wants to hit the target and wants to be first, it wants to be better, it wants to be the best. Female energy, and I say he and she, but it's everyone has male and female energy.
Right.
Female energy is more expansive, more creative, sees the overview. It's more of your wisdom and stuff. It takes everyone into consideration. It wants to love everybody and not just, it doesn't need to be the best. It feels the pain of others, so I would much prefer to take the pain than to experience someone else being in pain. Much easier to take it on. And that's what female energy. Now, male energy would be much, much better, best everybody, because that's its nature. So when you balance these things out, you have the strength of male energy and you have the strength of female energy working together. That's where you get your wisdom, your compassion, your kindness, and your abilities to lead as well.
When clients contact you and you employ SFT, what types of things are they facing? What problems in their lives are they encountering that makes them connect with you that you can help them with?
Well, these days, a lot of people who come to me these days they just hear my voice and they just, and I've heard this ever since I was just started my massage therapy thing, is like they were meditating or praying or whatever they do, and God or whoever they talk to told them to come see me that I could help them. So I get that a lot. I actually end up going into people say that I give them healings in the dream state, which I'm happy to do, but I think, these healing energies can take any form, and if it has to be me for them, that's fine. I'm not taking credit for it. But people come to me, and actually just using the book, I've had this woman in one of my workshops say, I was born with asthma. I've had asthma all my life, and I did a set of the tabs that you put in the book, and now I don't even need an inhaler, and it's really humid. I usually depend on the inhaler, but I don't need it at all. So thank you.
You've used the word tapping. You said it was rapping at one point. It's now tapping. There are people that don't really understand what you're talking about when you use that word.
Okay. So tapping is literally tapping on the top of your head and your chest and your abdomen. So it's like people who use affirmations. Either some people can use affirmations and they work, and some people can't. I can't use affirmations because if I say I'm a size 3, my body, my ego is going to say, you've never been a size 3. You're ridiculous. And it would taunt me, right? So what the tapping does is you say these firm, strong statements that I help people formulate with the books, or I have them in the books, and you say them 3 times while tapping the top of your head. And what that does is it disarms the ego, and it puts that intention at the top of the list of what to manifest. Now, humans manifest everything that they program themselves to manifest, they do. The problem is humans manifest negative things by default because they don't realize their own power. So the tapping taps into their own empowerment that they're not using right now and is actually retraining people to realize what empowered beings they are when they see the results of everything that they're tapping. And people are using these taps to really change their lives and change their own consciousness. So the tapping on the head programs it into the mind, which is a 3D printer, to manifest. Tapping on the chest sets it in the body so it manifests. And then tapping on the abdomen prevents the issue, which is stagnant energy, from scurrying or moving around in the body and, like, hiding dormant in the pelvic area or some parts of the body where you don't want it to be.
And so are they repeating the same series of words in all 3 locations when they tap?
Yes. So they say one statement 5 times, 3 times on the head, once on the chest, and once on the abdomen.
Give us an example of the type of statement that you would advise somebody to employ.
Okay. I use we, not I, because I found out the word I is almost like it summons the ego, almost like, you know, the series for a computer, you ask it a question and it turns on and answers you.
Mm-hmm.
The word I is just like that of the body. If you say I, the ego perks up and it activates, and then you're working against it. So I use the word we, so you don't activate the ego in the same way. And everyone has spirit guides and helpers to do the task. So here's a really simple one. We release being angry in all moments. And so you would say that 3 times. We release being angry in all moments 3 times. And then on the chest, release being angry. And then in the abdomen, we release being angry. Now, on my website, genuinehealing.com, there is a SFT worksheet called the Energetic Cleanse. And it's a series of taps where you use them like a Mad Lib, like we're using the word anger. So it's like 25 taps. You would put the word anger in every single one of those sentences and then say each sentence 5 times, 3 on the head, once on the chest, once on the abdomen. Do the whole series of taps, and then you dissipate your karmic connection with that issue. So it's like all energy pulls, which are vivaxuses, between you and anger, all agreements to be angry, all contracts, all karmic contracts or ties with being angry, all portals to anger, you're closing off. So there's a whole series that the adepts have painstakingly taken me through to cleanse any aspect of the issue from the body.
When somebody contacts you for help, how can you determine what help is appropriate for them, particularly when it comes to the tapping protocol? What do you do with them to figure out what might be their inner problem or what's blocking them from progressing?
Well, immediately they tell me in energy. So I don't let anybody tell me what they want a session for, because if they tell me, they're just going to tell me something that's very low at the surface, and then they're trying to control what I do. So I don't allow them to do that. So I just show up, and we start talking, and I get images and senses, and I'm usually dead on and stuff. Like, I'll get, like, an abusive father or a pain or a past life issue of being raped, or I get to see all the other things. Like, one woman came to me, and she had neck issues, and I saw her past lifetime. She was this regal queen, and she had to... And she was going to her execution, and she was beheaded.
Ooh.
Now, what was interesting about that was that, because it's very funny, but I collect tiaras for some reason. So then the tabs I would do with her is we release the trauma of being beheaded.
You get that specific. The taps you did with her were, we release the trauma of being beheaded.
Yep, but that's what the whole SFT lexicon book is about, is being that specific. So if you have neck issues, it's usually one of four things: being hung, being decapitated, being choked, or being crushed. So or having your neck snapped. So and I've gotten this through the clients and stuff. So I put in the book all the tabs I've gotten to help clients with, and they really help people. So then if you have lung issues, it's being drowned or suffocated or having a lung punctured. But I actually see the images, and the images get more horrific and more refined as I get more I'm pretty good at this. So I can see when people have, like, participated in genocide, or if they've been, like, Native Americans or whatever is the issue, I just see it. Now, you want to hear a real interesting case?
Of course, yes.
So this happens to a lot of people who are in their heads. So I saw this guy who was really in his head. He couldn't be in his heart at all. He just was totally in his head, just overthinking all the time. Well, I watched him be executed. He was actually beheaded. And after he was beheaded, the executioner held up his head and showed it to the crowd. Oof. And because he died in terror, and people, you know, it's really horrific to be killed in front of people like that. And I get to experience that, you know, secondhand by watching it and experiencing it in my body and everything. So what happened secondhand, what happened is his soul didn't move on, because when someone's killed in terror, they don't tend to cross over. They tend to stay with the body. But because all your senses are in the head, he didn't stay in the whole body. His whole soul went into his head.
Oh.
So this guy held up the head, and that's where his soul was. And his body was, his soul was not in the body at all, because it was dismembered, and all of them was in his head. And what happens is those are engrams. They're like pictures that we carry in our DNA, and that picture of being in his head and the trauma of it defined who he was in the present, and he was always in his head. And he felt like he was never able to get in his body. And so we go in the taps, and I give him actual taps. We reattach your head. We reconnect to your heart. We reconnect to your body. We heal your body. And all these things. And those actually shift the energy in him. It's so deep that nothing else will work. So.
Jen, that is, I mean, it's fascinating, but it's also horrific in a way. When you see these things, when you have an experience like that where you're seeing this man beheaded and the executioner hold up his head in front of a crowd, which is just... is just horrifying. Do you have a physical reaction to that? Does it frighten you, or are you just so used to it that you just take it more academically?
Well, the thing is, and that's why my background is so perfect. I've been terrorized by my family and by the sociopath to a point of numbness where I can't I can't be moved by anything horrific anymore. So when I see these images, it's just clinical for me. It is horrific, and I do have reactions. And by the way, when I had my dogs would see the images, and they would come up on me trembling during the session. So I was trying to, like, balance talking to the client and soothing my trembling dog who was seeing the Akashic records as well, because they're so sensitive.
Who would benefit, Jen, from your book, the SFT Lexicon?
Oh, my gosh. Everyone. Everyone who it says such, because it has mostly any issue that you can think of in there, like suicide or death or losing a child, wanting to conceive a child. Lots of things that we don't think of, like why, like, oh, I can't have a baby. Well, most people who can't have a baby is because they've lost a child in a past lifetime, and they're terrified of, you know, they've actually literally had babies gutted out of their bellies because they were, like, you know, a concubine of the king, and they didn't matter. Yeah. So their baby was ripped out of their belly, and they were left to die. And the terror of that prevents them from having a child in this lifetime. So anybody who's blocked, anyone who's told that they're a lost cause, anyone who facilitates any kind of healing, they use my book as a reference guide. It's a textbook for life. And those people who help others and are so broken down because everyone complains to them, well, this is a great tool for that, because if someone complains to you, either they want help or they just want sympathy and they want to dump on you and use you. So if they want help, you can use the book, the SFT Tabernacle, and look up their issues and give them taps to do. And if they want to use you, you'll find that out, because if they're not willing to do the taps, that means they're not willing to try anything. That means why should you, like, take it out of your hide and let yourself be worn down by their issues if they're not going to help themselves? So it's really good for that. And we've been trained just to be so careless in energy and just to use each other and dump on each other that something like this is really neat to hold people accountable for their own issues.
You have written, I think you said 19 books, a lot of books. I believe this is the most recent. Is that correct?
Well, this one is the amazing one because I knew, like, on some level I was battling truth and the reason I call myself a dynamic healer is because the powers that be were trying to dry up the possibility of healing in humanity. Like creativity and kindness, love. Why is it easier, more acceptable to yell at someone than to say, I love you? Because these things were intentionally trying to be dried up by some force, whatever. And so healing was one of those vibratory things that was consciously trying to be dried up. Like, it's against the law to say you're a healer, right? So I use the word healer so other people permission to know that they're a healer. Everybody's a healer. Someone, you smile at someone, they smile back. A smile actually changes your brain chemistry. So if you can help someone smile, you're a healer, and you're changing their brain chemistry. So everybody's a healer. So it's ridiculous that we can't use the word, and it's ridiculous that people don't realize their own empowerment and what's possible. So I forgot the question.
I know, the ultimate question was going to be, do you recommend any of your other work as a companion to the SFT Lexicon?
Well, yeah, the thing is the SFT Lexicon is the one to get. That one you can get on my website. And the reason for that is, like, my fiancé, my soulmate, who is dynamic in business, he does for the business world what I do for the individual, which is amazing. He's going to bring the world amazing shifts in consciousness that way. He's that intelligent. He's actually able to edit my books because he's tried to read them. And, you know, it's funny. Here's another evidence that I was Madame Blavatsky. He says that my writing is like English is my second language. And it's kind of true, but I can't help it because I don't know how to write any other way. So he's editing all the books to make them really digestible to anyone, not just someone who can, like, follow with me. Because you might pick up that my thoughts are all over the place because my consciousness is kind of expansive and it takes everything in. So it's hard for people to follow along sometimes. And you're doing a great job, JV.
Well, I think you're doing a terrific job. You're putting all of these concepts into terms that I can understand, and I know that means that if I can understand them, that our audience understands them well. So I'm very appreciative of that as well. You said the book is available on your website, because I think I went to Amazon, and I think it said they're unavailable. I'm not. Right. I might be wrong about that, but I thought I saw that.
No, that's true. So that's the thing. We have 19 books on... We had 19 books on Amazon, and when these writers put their books up, this is they don't make any money, so it's going to a third party. So
Right. Part
of the things we do is these subtle healings, and we want to shift that. So when I write a book, you know, that's my experience. I've worked for that.
Sure.
And anyone else who's written a book, so if they give it to Amazon, they're diluting their effectiveness because they're not getting compensated for it. So as we upgrade the books so they're like really digestible by mainstream, we're going to put them on the website so that everyone can get a good. I mean, they're a good, solid book. We just got our first hard copy of the second edition, and it really looks like a textbook for life. It really is beautiful, and you can feel the energy in it. You can feel the intention, and we're just so proud of that because people are getting helped with it. There's no better feeling because everything I've went through, it doesn't even matter because I'm able to turn it into lemonade. If I can help people with what I've gone through, then so what? You know, it's so wonderful. It's so wonderful to know that when I go out this lifetime, that I have made a difference, and that everything that I did was able to do for others, I'm doing.
Yeah, your outlook on everything is inspiring. The fact that you suffered so many hardships, but yet turned all of those into positive energy to help other people is just amazing, Jen. I want to remind people that your website is genuinehealing.com, and genuine is J-E-N, a play on Jen's name. But your story is fantastic. The book is fabulous as well. It's a great help to people. And thank you so much for being here and sharing all of this with us.
Thank you for being such a good host and listening, and you're amazing yourself.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I hope you'll agree to come back at some point.
I'd love to. Just ask me, and I'll be here.